Coming.
That's not how the jam jam.
All right, here it is. The Halloween special edition of the Pursuit of Bitcoin Jam. I'm joined by my friend. I think he came out of the canteen sequence from Star Wars.
Site Perro, baby.
Is that
This is just Site
Perro?
Perro.
That's just
Doggy Diamond
exactly how it
Demon.
is. And then I think this is like a Minecraft, but you actually stole Max's natural hair, right?
People probably think Max is sitting over here,
Right.
and that's Steve.
I'm pretty sure that's Max right there.
But I'm actually Steve
You're
from
Steve.
Halloween.
Steve from Minecraft.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know the Minecraft lore that well, but
The
he's like the main
name of
character.
the main character in my gut was Steve. So I was
Awesome.
like, Steve.
Yes.
Hey.
See, but in the movie, Jack Black plays Steve. So that's why
That's why you got the hair.
my beard does not didn't jump, do it. So
Right. But it blends nicely
basically,
with your
just
mustache and everything.
The only thing they need here is the ajoloto. Remember? Everyone, any of our diehard listeners know the ajoloto is from Minecraft.
Is that's one of the animals?
Yeah. It's the weird little
You knew a
Mexican.
little animal that you told me about with the weird name.
Axolotl.
Yeah. I think that's what he's
It's the
saying.
same thing. Yeah. But one super serious question. Why is it that the scariest one of us all is DK, what is this horrific mask you've got on? And I gotta know, where is the mini suit? I was promised this mini
This is
suit.
mini. This is my costume.
Oh.
I got my mini costume right here. You misread our message.
Yeah, it's come on.
We have the full-blown mini costume
Oh,
here at the City of
right.
Bitcoin. You've not seen the movie yet. You should see Who is Bitcoin movie. Look it up on YouTube.
Oh.
It's viral produced, and we thought you were going to wear that.
Yeah, come
I
on.
thought you in the group chat. You said you were going to dress me up as that, and I showed up, and my wardrobe was not ready. So,
Well, folks, the episode is still live. So if we want to get a video suit for DJ, it sounds like he's ready.
All right.
I'm seeing a message. Mike's not on for PBJ.
Oh, is that right? What happened? Did we, people are upset. They want to hear the TBJ.
I know.
I didn't get any such messages. Alex's stuff sound all right for you? All right.
Hey, if anybody's watching, if you could pop in the chat, can you hear us?
I bet they just can't hear Max because he's got his
Oh,
paper
is
mache.
that it?
Oh, all right. Now he says
Yeah.
it's working. All right.
Okay.
Maybe a temporary glitch.
Okay.
Maybe it's the costumes. I don't know.
Yeah. I may do a little wardrobe change myself in a minute. So, can y'all hear me? If anyone's listening to this chat, can you hear me in this mask or no? We'll wait for someone to say. Anyways.
Okay, somebody said better. So happy Halloween. That's why we're dressed like this, right?
Happy. Is it a special day?
It's a special day in Bitcoin land.
Oh, why is that?
Well, it was on October 31st, 2008, that the Bitcoin white paper was first presented to the public.
At 11:10 a.m. Pacific time. So
Yep.
1 hour ago.
Yep.
Ooh, almost
Well,
perfect
17
timing.
years and 1 hour ago.
Yeah.
And, I think it's actually interesting that it happened to such little fanfare. Do you know how many people responded to it in the first 24 hours?
How many?
Two.
And who were they?
The one guy, I don't remember his name, but he was kind of like skeptical, but curious. He was like open to learning more, but he was kind of like skeptical. And then the other was Hal Finney.
Was the other one Curious DK?
Did not make an appearance on the Cypherpunks
Is
mailing list.
Hal Finney Satoshi? Was he just responding to himself?
But I think it's actually interesting that it was so low key because nothing like all of the subsequent things are not low key at all. All the subsequent things are big hype and, try to harvest out hype from, some sort of like Twitter audience or something. And Bitcoin, the OG, the king, the only one that really matters, basically had no attention, no fanfare. It launched to like two responses in the first 24 hours.
Yeah.
Which is telling for almost anything new you're building. Like, you don't necessarily need to think about how much hype am I building, but how much substance am I building?
Yeah.
Totally.
That's a, I mean, that's a great point, right? Because up until that point, there had been several attempts at digital cash. They'd failed. They each had different centralization points. But it was a very niche community at the time. And there certainly was no investment or money attached to it. So it didn't draw in a much bigger crowd. And I think a lot of cypherpunks on that list were just, they're skeptical by nature. They were skeptical on this claim.
Right.
Completely reasonable to be skeptical, I think. But here we are 17 years later.
Yeah.
Is it 17 years?
Wow. Crazy. I think that's a great broader point too. I mean, just something I think about in investing in general is like, whenever the crowds are rushing into anything, I'm like, shit, I don't want to be. I mean, it's nice if you've already placed your bets very early, but to your point, it seems like everything that changes the world almost always starts as like, people just, they either don't see it at all, or if they do see it, they think it's a joke. So just, I don't know.
But once something is in the mainstream hype, it's almost like not the right time to be pursuing it. It's
like, you want to find something else.
You want to find the ideas from the edge, right? You want to find the things that are not yet. That was, yes, exactly.
Pump it, Max's show.
Pump it, baby, pump it.
By the way, should we point the audience? We have the white paper framed in.
That's my costume.
Yeah. Maybe we should make that a permanent fixture. I mean, we can keep it at the entrance of Prison City of Bitcoin, but like when we record, maybe we bring this in every week.
Yeah.
Not just once a year.
All right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. It's nice looking.
Good to have our Bible.
Any other facts that you guys have dug up on the 2008 launch?
I actually learned one this morning. I don't know if this is true, but if it is, it would make a lot of sense. I saw this briefly on a Nostr post that apparently almost 500 years prior, I think it was 493, 492, I forget exactly, but apparently Martin Luther put up his theses on October 31st. Mm. I have not verified that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true. Maybe some people in the audience or Steve, maybe you know. But if it is, that's really interesting to me because, you know, in the same way that the sort of gist of this post was that, you know, Martin Luther found the corruption in the church and published, you know, his doctrine to say, no, you can just speak directly to God. It's all in you. In the same way, the white paper, that's our thesis. And Satoshi is our sort of Martin Luther that says, no, there's a lot of corruption in the state and you don't need these centralized parties to act like vampires sucking your life force. So
I'm curious, you called me out to know something. Did you know that I grew up Lutheran, Max?
Was that? I did not know that, actually. I had no idea. But
I actually did not know that.
Yeah. So if anyone can verify that for us. Oh, confirmed. We got confirmed. October 31st, 1517. Wow. And this is one of those things where whoever Satoshi is, like, no coincidence. You know what I'm saying? There's no like, oh, it was just dropped on a random day. No. October 31st was for a reason. Also, maybe he liked Halloween.
I did not know this, but do you know that it was originally published? We all know that it was originally published on Bitcoin.org, right? You know that?
I don't.
Okay, that's
what do you mean by originally published?
The white paper was published on Bitcoin.org. That's where it was available.
Before October? No.
Well,
I don't think Bitcoin.org existed until months or years later.
It says, this is, you know, maybe it's Grok is lying to me, but it says, hosted on Bitcoin.org originally, the white paper was uploaded to Bitcoin.org, a domain registered anonymously on August 18th, 2008. Mm. So that was interesting.
Okay. I don't know the specifics, but that surprises me. I thought it came a little bit later.
I thought it was hosted on Bitcoin.com, hosted by Roger Ver.
But it was, the .org was registered anonymously via anonymousspeech.com in Japan, which is a registrar that maybe doesn't take a lot of information in order to register and host. So another little piece I just learned today doing some research.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? White paper, little facts. 114 words in the abstract. There's a lot of numerology.
Well, I just think it's interesting. There's so many things that are very important to a lot of people in Bitcoin today that are not in the white paper that were in the initial code drop, though, like 21 million, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole like supply and how it's distributed and minted, that was sort of left to the code.
So that there's no mention of it in the white paper. So the first time anybody saw that was January 3rd or whatever. When was the actual software to run was published January 3rd, 2009 or something?
I think that's right. I mean, January 3rd is when the Genesis block is dated. I think that's when the code was dropped. Although, I think the code was shared with others in 2008 privately.
Oh, okay.
But like the
public,
the final 1.0 version of the software, January 3rd sounds right.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk numerology for a minute. DK, I didn't know you were a numerologist. What are those words in the abstracts? What does that mean to you?
It doesn't really mean anything particular to me, but there's a lot of people searching for potential meaning there. 114 words in the Bitcoin white paper's abstract have sparked curiosity and speculation. So coincidence, most likely Satoshi didn't count the words. But the numerology and symbolism is 114 equals 1 plus 1 plus 4 equals 6. Some link this to 6 confirmations, a common Bitcoin security threshold.
Wow. That is, this sounds like some
highly speculative. Do you know what Japanese gorowase is? No. It's wordplay with numbers. You thought it was something about waifu. No, it's wordplay with numbers. And 114 can be read as 2 yo equals good or all right. So, yeah. Max, sorry to disappoint, but I'm not a numerologist.
Yeah, those are pretty bad. But if someone else has other numerology that they could share, I'd be curious, because I do think that this is definitely, whoever Satoshi is, was paying a lot of attention.
Dude, I can keep going.
One other one that I think is interesting, I forget the number, but a number that would be really wild is the number of tokens. So I saw someone, I was reading someone's investment letter where they mentioned the number of sort of like AI style tokens that the Bitcoin white paper is. I don't know if anyone has that number. Maybe you want to throw that out. That would be interesting to look at too.
Psalm 114.
Ooh, what's that?
Is short and about liberation. A stretch, but some draw parallels to financial freedom.
Mm. It wouldn't surprise me if there's hidden gems in there, but whatever.
There's so much.
It doesn't really matter.
Kind of perfect planning and execution of the thing. It's just a work of art. It really feels like a creative work of art, just perfect polish.
Well, Michelangelo. Maybe this would be a good moment to, you know, someone asked, is Hal Finney Satoshi? I'm just curious. I mean, I know that, what's his name? The conservative reporter dudes, like, out there claiming CIA, which maybe, who's y'all's best take? I know it doesn't necessarily matter, but, you know, whatever, have a little fun. Who do you guys speculate is Satoshi?
I don't like to speculate.
Yeah, same.
I think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter for Bitcoin and Bitcoiners. It puts people's personal safety at risk.
He obviously wanted to be forgotten. He gave us a gift. Let's let him have his wishes met.
So sorry to poo-poo your question there, Max. But that is how, I think it's like, and actually it's kind of beautiful in its mystery. Like, let's just keep the beautiful
mystery. Keep it as a mystery, yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, I don't downplay the idea that this could be a very, very long-term game, and, you know, perhaps some really smart powers that be saw demographic shifts happening in the world and said, you know, the dollar dies, what comes next? Or regardless, even if that is the case, I don't think it changes anything. It's all public. It's all open source, whether it's one person, whether it's a group. I mean, it's fun to speculate, of course. What's his name? The early internet dude. Oh, I'm forgetting his name. Possiplex is his book. Fabulous book. He has a wild claim that it's an actual Japanese mathematician. There's a lot of wild claims out there, but you can do your own research and go down your own rabbit holes.
The only thing we know is it's not Craig Wright.
We already said it was Roger Ver at the Bitcoin.com.
We're all Satoshi.
All right. Okay. With that, should we? Do you want to?
With that.
Okay, there.
Oh my God. No.
You're
now you look
sweating
like me.
Like crazy. Yeah, now you can't.
I don't think I can handle this.
It's Steve and there. Steve.
Although it's really driving me nuts. This,
oh, it's better.
You tell me, this beard, the strap keeps coming off. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
If it looks stupid, let me know.
It looks good.
I mean, beyond, no, if it looks crooked, let me know.
Okay.
And then I'll take it off.
You also look a little bit like Wences now. I like it.
Wences or you? I don't know. I look like a combination.
The hybridized love show.
Combination, yeah, of Wences, exactly. And Max.
Shout out.
Should we, I don't know what all we want to talk about, but there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, what do we got?
Steak and Shake just announced this morning some stuff. There maybe?
Yeah.
Let's see, what did they announce? Steak and Shake announced a strategic Bitcoin reserve, which is awesome.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
yeah, check the group chat.
And it's Max just rolls in at noon. it's what I'd call the Square style of strategic Bitcoin reserve, not the sailor style.
Yeah.
It's not like a leverage thing. It's just, I think what they committed to is any Bitcoin they receive from customers, they're going to retain as Bitcoin and put it in their strategic Bitcoin reserve, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Which will, you know, probably start relatively small, but grow over time, not only the accumulation, but the percentage of customers paying in Bitcoin. They also announced, is this crooked, David? Your job is to tell me it's crooked.
The people on camera can't see this side.
Okay.
So it's crooked, right. But
you look good.
I learned I can't smile. If I smile, then it comes off.
All right. Just be regular.
I have to be like super serious.
Just be like really pissed.
Yeah. See, there I go. I smiled and it came off. They also announced a integration with Fold.
I saw that.
Which looked, I mean, you're the one that noted that. What is it, like if you, what was it exactly? You get $5.
Yeah, I think
if you pay with Fold, then you get $5.
Yeah. So I think Fold probably just as a marketing expense, you know, it's helpful to get Bitcoin topped up in people's wallets and a wallet that you can use and spend it. It's take and shake, right? So I think Fold is doing a partnership with them where Fold will fund the $5 into your Fold wallet that you can then use to pay Stake and Shake. So it kind of like pairs nicely and, you know, it's like a marketing expense for Fold is otherwise, I think, probably making exchange fees on like fiat Bitcoin on-ramp. So it's just they know that if they get more people in the door, you know, in on their app as more a payment money. App, then they can make money at it. So it's really nice kind of ecosystem, I think, bootstrap that they're willing to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to see more and more Bitcoin companies partnering with payment, you know, point of sale providers or with merchants. Obviously, they have a vested interest, boost their own business, but it'll be like a more than the sum of the parts type
and,
of.
And in a lot of like a small, like a local business, I know Stake and Shake is more like a national thing, but if you're like a local coffee shop or a farmer's market business, you often don't have a lot of margin to play with. You're kind of like running it pretty tight. Whereas a technology business that has some sort of a Bitcoin fiat exchange thing either has a lot of margin or has a lot more potential to scale margin. So they could be a marketing cost that they could more easily kind of support rationally.
Right. Yeah. And then the third component of their Stake and Shake's announcement was that they're going to support OpenSats and open source Bitcoin development.
Yep. Good.
I think it was 210 sats per Bitcoin meal they sell.
That's awesome. I like
so
that.
You got Steve saying sats.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm a champion for the Bitcoin B symbol visually.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think
and then people can
sense.
Say it however they like. Right. And so you know, quick math there. I actually before I do run through my math, how many Bitcoin sales per day, or how many Stake and Shake restaurants are there?
No idea.
I think it's like 5,000 or something.
Okay, yeah.
It's on that.
Something
order.
Like that.
3,700.
Right, yeah. If anyone wants to fact check us and give us the
so something like that. Let's just say 5,000.
Yeah, 5,000. Call it easy.
Who is Steve? Steve from Minecraft.
Steve, Deanna,
you need to watch Minecraft.
Steve is Steve, and Steve is playing the role of another person named Steve.
Yeah.
It's Meta Dora.
Yeah.
So how many? So let's say there's 5,000 stores. How many Bitcoin meals per day do they sell?
Well, how many meals per day
today?
How many meals per day do they sell?
I don't know. That this is we're interviewing you for a job, Max. How would you go about estimating that?
Well, I mean, I really don't know how many meals per day they would. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's easier to say how many Bitcoin meals per day because it's very few. I would say probably per store, like one.
Okay, so 5,000 a day.
5,000 a day.
So, and then at the so even with just that,
Average cost of a meal.
Reasonable slash low estimate.
Yeah, $20.
Well, that doesn't matter. Because they're donating the same amount no matter what the purchase size is.
Got it.
It's the number of meals per day. So it would be like...
million sats?
Five. Two hundred and... wait, one to three. $425,000 a year, I think, in donations.
To OpenSats.
Yeah. Which nice. I think that's quite nice.
That's awesome.
Right? And I mean,
and it's not
Tether just donated $250,000.
Right.
So is Stake and Shake from 210 sat donations per meal can do more than that right at today's rate. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And imagine if it grows by 10x.
Exactly.
Then it's millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Well, I love this in general, this idea of instead of a fixed amount, like I think if there's one thing that really Bitcoin has taught me, it's incentives. Always put the incentives in place. And yeah, if it's like a scalable, you know, donation, that's the same with Bitwise, right? With their ETF, which is, you know, if someone wants to use an ETF, I still recommend Bitwise because they 10% of whatever goes through there, right? So I would love to see more, I guess, donations to Bitcoin be sort of tied to the success of Bitcoin itself.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I think that's really exciting. So good stuff from Stake and Jake. I definitely wanted to follow up on some of the ideas we talked about on the last show. And we talked about the night before at the Builder event when we had Pink Owl Coffee come here.
I went to Pink Owl yesterday.
Oh yeah, let's hear about that. Yeah,
so there's all kinds of things there. Yeah. So we've all done a lot of follow-up. So you want to start with your...
Sure.
Yeah, tell us.
Well, I was going to hang out with Bob and I was like, oh, let's just go meet at Pink Owl. You know, or he sort of suggested it because we were going to hang somewhere up there. So he was hanging out at Pink Owl. He'd already sort of bought his lunch and coffee at the time I'd arrived. So I was like, hey, I'm going to go get a coffee or whatever, you know, Cortado. So I walk up there and, you know, order the thing. And they're, I was like, hey, I heard I could pay in Bitcoin. Is that right? And the person's like, yes, you can, of course. And then they kind of already knew about it. They were already trained up on how to get, you know, I think the Square terminal to, you know, show the QR code. And I used Primal as my my wallet.
Shout out Million. Let's go.
Which when I paid it, it was great. It was super easy. It worked right away. It was all fast. The slight nit that we discussed is that it did, the presentation didn't say sats, but the wallet did say sats.
What did the presentation say?
It has the Bitcoin B symbol, right?
Oh,
Square shows the Bitcoin B symbol.
Well, I thought that was the whole point. Oh, but you
so
wanted
it's a little disconnected to be like, I'm paying this thing and I'm reading this Bitcoin B symbol, this thing, and then I'm seeing on my side it shows
sats.
Sats.
That's which, good.
Like, I understand why, but just a little inconsistency if somebody doesn't understand why. I think more wallets and everybody kind of congregating on the same nomenclature and design and style would help new people who don't really understand all the nuance feel better and more certain that the thing they expected.
And what do you think would be best there? Just to have the B symbol on both?
Seems rational to me, but I haven't done the whole design exercise. I don't know, Steve or Matt or somebody else.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, we had it almost a year ago, our episode in December. We talked all about the Bitcoin B symbol.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't know you could. He likes to say sat still. I didn't realize.
I mean,
as long as
we've also talked on the show
that sat pulls off the internet.
So the evolution in thinking here is, focus on the display, not what people speak. Don't police how people speak about stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
You can say corn, coin, Bitcoin, bits, sats. Mm-hmm. Whatever you'd like, whatever feels natural and comfortable. I say Bitcoin sometimes, I say sat sometimes, but the display should be the Bitcoin B symbol.
I agree with all that.
Much simpler and more beautiful.
And as we touched on in earlier episodes, I like letting language evolve naturally. I think sat has kind of already evolved naturally, but the B symbol I think is spot on. So,
but I saw Joe, he came by and shook hands. And
who's Joe?
Oh, the owner of Pink Owl, yeah.
Nice. He missed Builder. So,
He
doesn't know Joe like we know Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
Not yet.
But you should watch Haley's 21 and 21 interview with Joe.
Oh,
sick. Yeah, she sent me that.
So for anyone wasn't here in person for Builder, you can watch Haley's 21 and 21 episode.
So one question on this is, we talked about, you know, I'm guessing Joe is a pretty hardcore Bitcoiner to be the early adopter, which is awesome for whatever his reasons are. What I'm more curious about is, we talked about how do you make sure your staff who may not have heard the good word yet, how they get into it. Did the staff, like, did he mention anything? Like, now he's a Bitcoiner too. Is he personally excited about it, or just kind of like, oh yeah, my boss tells me to do this thing. Like, I'll do this thing.
I didn't talk to the cashier. She didn't volunteer her, like, you know, private keys or anything. I'm a customer coming in to make a transaction she just made the transaction easy for me.
Did she seem excited or not really?
I'd say her face kind of like, oh yeah. Like, I know how to do that. Yeah. You know, her face kind of lit up, I'd say, or she was like very welcoming and, you know, it was a great experience, but we didn't nerd out on Bitcoin stuff, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, okay. It would be something to follow up with Joe about, because I'm really curious about this question of, like, you know, you may have the owners that are really stoked,
yeah,
but how to get, how to get the staff excited too is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, so I've been talking with folks on my Spiral team who were working on a project to help merchant adoption of Bitcoin and ultimately customer adoption. This will be independent of Square. Square will obviously be part of it, but you know, there's merchants that use Toast and Clover and other point of sale solutions. We want to be able to point them to, you know, ways to accept Bitcoin as well, which of course can include switching to Square. but you know, that shouldn't be a requirement. Some people maybe like their current solution, or it's just a much bigger lift to switch.
Yeah.
So I actually tweeted out early this morning, like, what are other solutions for point of sale? I already know a bunch. I'm just curious to crowdsource other ideas. Because one thing that we'd like to create from Spiral is like a one-page leave behind. I forget if we talked about this last week or not, but I'll talk about it again. But we want to arm the Bitcoin army with simple material that can help them sell their favorite merchants, their local merchants globally. And so like just a one page leave behind that makes the case, we think it should focus on saving 3% fees, like saving the fees, like sell the merchant on the biggest value proposition to them. So we produced that, and we're thinking of ways to how to get that in the hands of people, printed out high quality, consistent way for people to hand it out. And we have some other clever ideas too that may or may not be sitting on this table to help. I'll let you guys figure it out, and the audience figure it out. To maybe
Minecraft act.
Arm.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm looking at. Someone, by the way, called you a Bitcoin miner, which I thought was
clever.
Oh, yeah. All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if someone's done that within Minecraft.
We talked to that Minecraft dude like Sad years Atlantis. Ago. Yeah. That was cool. Like, now they have an open source server, but that'd be good.
So we're thinking through ways. Like, one way, there's a lot of other Bitcoin spaces in addition to Presidio Bitcoin. Like, can we arm those locations and then the people that go there and start there and grow? So that's an initiative we're thinking about doing.
I like Matthew's suggestion, force the staff to listen to PBJ weekly. That's that's clearly
required.
they can have a TV on in the cafe or whatever and just live stream us.
One other thought on that, when you say you think the fees are what to focus on, I think the fees is a really good one. I'm curious, maybe it's worth like testing or getting feedback. I mean, the other thing that makes a lot of sense to me is just like save in Bitcoin, right? I think more and more people are hearing like the dollar is dying or my local currency is dying.
Yeah.
Oh, have you guys, I don't know.
That's a good question. Yeah. That's one reason I'm bringing it up on the show is just to get other good ideas. I think we should talk about that. Cause I mean, Square started with that feature.
Yeah.
The conversions feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the numbers it's been in beta for a long time, but now it's live. And because Bitcoin acceptance doesn't go live until November 10th, but the conversions is already live. And
conversions mean your customers pay you with USD and then you convert some fraction of it into Bitcoin as a merchant.
Super simple UI. You just say like, 1% or 5% or 10%, or I think you can go up to 50% now. I think, I figured if Joe said it publicly. Anyway, Joe's a good saver. Let's just put it that way. I think we should definitely consider that as well. I think it's a super compelling argument to merchant. I mean, the one difference with it might be one of the best or the best tool to get the merchant to start, but it doesn't have the network effects of like getting the engagement of customers. So we need to think about it in that light as well.
Well, and I just think from a human psychology perspective, it's a really big, like, I think the number of merchants who would say, I would be interested in saving in Bitcoin if I'm paid in Bitcoin is going to be substantially higher than the number of merchants who are so orange pilled, they say, convert the USD I'm getting into Bitcoin. I think it's just like a psychology thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like most people are not orange pilled enough. They're like, oh, get rid of the dirty money and give me the good money. I think for a lot of people, it's like, I'll give you an example with my honey dealer. Like there's no chance in hell he would ever like turn on the convert to Bitcoin conversion feature. But because I like pay him in Bitcoin, he thinks it's cool. He's like, I want to save all or a portion of that in Bitcoin. And so I think it's just like a cool little thing. And it also kind of like subtly encourages them to be like, oh, if I want more, like I should encourage.
Right. I think those are all good points. One thing we talked about is that there's no single group or source that's going to come up with the definitive sales pitch, right?
Yeah.
It's the world's diverse, merchants are diverse, locations are diverse, et cetera. And even Bitcoin, what resonates with people varies a lot. So
yeah.
I think we definitely agree there'll be multiple versions of this leave behind. And like, let's create, like, let's start with like the best two or three that we can think of, mm-hmm. publish that, others and can contribute. And then the Bitcoin advocate who's going to print them out and go hand them out can choose.
Add their own. Yeah.
You know, what fits their style best and what do they think will be the best sales pitch? And they might learn. They might think option A is the best. They go try it. It fails. They try option B and they're like, that was the right one.
Yeah.
So I think conversions are saving two different ways, like you pointed out. One is like convert fiat to Bitcoin, but also the other psychology is like, okay, whatever I receive in Bitcoin, I'll just keep
that Bitcoin. Yeah.
So I think that's super cool. I'd like to follow up on what I was really stoked from our conversation last week about a Bitcoin merchant association.
Yeah.
Not a, but the many.
Yeah, many
Bitcoin merchant associations, like the Marin Bitcoin Merchant Association. So I had a good conversation with some other folks on my team about that. And I have some questions. So maybe you guys or maybe someone in the audience has additional ideas. One thing that resonated with me from last week's show is the local component and sort of grassroots,
mm-hmm.
like the Joes of the world from Pingala Coffee who are big Bitcoin advocates. They are a merchant, probably have vested interest in, or do have a vested interest, whether they know it or not, to get other merchants in the community to accept Bitcoin, which begets more customers having Bitcoin in a spending wallet on their phone and know how to do it and think about it, and it's a habit. And so it just makes a lot of sense. So it resonated with me to like, how do we enable the Joes of the world to do that? And then do it at a local level. That still resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to take time to grow, months, years, etc. Like we convince Joe to do it and he'll do it in Marin, but then like others will sprout up. But like a year from now, like a wild success would be like, you know, hundreds or thousands, but there's millions and millions and millions of merchants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this one page leave behind that we'd like to make available like ASAP, you know, does it point to a website or a Facebook page or some kind of resource? And if so, it can't be, we're not in a position yet to like point to the local version.
Right.
Because there are zero. And even a year from now, if there's like 1,000, there's not millions. So,
right.
There's not one that's relevant to if I'm an advocate in Iowa or something, maybe there's not the local Iowa chapter. So should there be a global website or resource page or whatever for Bitcoin Merchant Association? And then, it almost seems like yes, for that reason.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
And then if I want to create the local chapter in the Presidio or wherever I live, can I just go to that global one and like, either A, I can just use it, but if I have ideas to customize the experience for my community, I can just like click a button.
Yeah.
And it creates
the website.
Yeah, clone the website basically.
Yeah, like
and then have, you know, whether I'm vibe coding or whatever tools I'm using, I can or like if there's this global resource of ideas and options, and I can just select, I like these three ideas.
Right.
Click them, they show up on the Presidio Merchant Association website. What are your thoughts on these ideas?
Yeah, I mean, overall I like the idea of having some, you know, the leave behind messaging and then kind of having that available on a global or kind of at least national, but hopefully global website. I think one of the things that, and then obviously letting people customize it for their own needs sounds great. One of the things that I think is, let's say, under-discussed, like I think it's the benefit of using Bitcoin in a kind of a merchant customer transaction is very, very obvious to the merchant in terms of saving the 3% fees. It's not clear why the customer should want to use it. So I think having some messaging around that, like what do we think is the best way to explain to merchants why their customers should or help them design programs that might work with their customers to encourage that spending. I think there's obviously, you know, things like the Fold app that gives you $5. That's one reason. But if you just kind of get like, here's $5 free, go spend it, that might not create the habit. So what are the ways to empower the merchants to explain to the community why they should be using it?
Yeah, I think there's two marketing kits that need to be created here. One is for the Bitcoin advocate, people like us, people like that are watching the show.
Yep.
And we're not necessarily, most of us would not be merchants. So their marketing kit for that, that would be the one page leave behind and a few other things maybe. Then the separate marketing kit is for merchants. And these would be for the Joes of the world. They'd be for the early adopters.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to be Bitcoiners themselves because otherwise,
why would they do this?
Yeah. Why would they do it? I mean, you know, eventually they don't start as a Bitcoiner, but they'll see the business interest in becoming more of a vocal advocate in their community. But to start with, it'll be Bitcoiners. But I think there'll be a marketing kit for merchants. And then that would include what you're talking about, which is like, what are all the things that I can do as a merchant to like make customers aware they can pay in Bitcoin, why they should pay in Bitcoin, ideas like offering 21% off or like very aggressive marketing tactics. Even providing like the numbers behind it, why maybe that's not as outrageous as it sounds. Like you're not going to go bankrupt if you do that. And maybe that varies by business category too. I mean, different businesses have different margins and different customer acquisition costs. So for one business, 21% off can make complete sense. For another, it would be, you know, idiotic. So,
right. Yeah.
So I can imagine like that all being many variations there. For different types of businesses.
And so a couple ideas that come to mind, I'll come back to the association, but just on that, I mean, it would be dope for Square to actually also give people the tools to be able to run their own rewards programs and experiment, and then also like highlight what's worked for other people. So maybe it services for your kind of business. We've seen this kind of thing work. And you can do that just like very like organic at first as part of an association with just a PDF or a website and saying, here's some case studies of what worked, what didn't. But eventually it'd be cool if you had just in the terminal, it's like, hey, I'm going to accept Bitcoin, like click here to like set up like what we recommend as the rewards program.
Yep.
So I think that'd be great.
Real quick riff on that. So agree. Also, we got to keep in mind, I mean, obviously Square launching is amazing and it's my own company. So I hope they do really well. Mm-hmm. But we, as Bitcoiners, we need to think about other point of sale solutions too. We're also investors in startups too, right? Yeah. So like for all the startups and wallets and point of sale solutions that have been developed so far and the ones to come, these are great opportunities for them to stand out, move faster than big companies.
Yeah.
So that, you know, different, I'd love to see different experiments play out from different startups.
I agree. And anything for startups and some startups I'm invested in, I know are thinking a little bit about this, but like, yeah, like just start with like a rewards program. So if you're going to accept Bitcoin, like how do you give the tools to that merchant to figure out what kind of rewards program to do and to actually just like execute it, just make it super easy. Like click here and like you get whatever, 10% off. And that's what we recommend. And you should be able to use AI to like see what's working, what's not, and like shift that up or down over time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really good idea. On the point with the Bitcoin associations, I love, so like I'm envisioning a couple things. One, sort of like the GitHub type page where you can just like open a pull request and like anyone can get their, I don't know if you want to start, maybe you want to be more, a little more selective at first, or maybe you don't. I have an idea on how you could do the latter, but like, you know, there's no reason there shouldn't be as hyper local as you want it to be. It could just be like on my street, you know, association or, you know, San Francisco or Presidio and all the levels in between. Maybe you start off a little bit more sort of like, you know, BitDev started off with New York and then with San Francisco and then a few others. But one thing that'd be really cool over time to grow into, or maybe even start with this from day one, is give people the ability to do it, to register their chapter. And on the page that does it, either they choose it or the page does it automatically, give them a Noster identity. Because what's really cool there is you could start saying, okay, there's infinite number. This is like the whole web of trust thing we've been talking about for well over a year, is you could have filtering. You could say like, all right, anyone can start an association. But if I want to go and see which association I want to be part of or whatever, I could, it'd be really cool to see, you know, kind of like the little like faces of like, here are the Noster keys that are running this one or that support this association. And then somehow that should all feed back into the BTC open map, which eventually should use Noster as well. And every identity, every store that has a location on that map should also have a Noster identity. So they can then publish out Noster and everyone else like openly, like what their deals are, et cetera, et cetera. But like, ideally what I'm envisioning is the open social graphs. You can just see who's part of what and like who's supporting which businesses. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for network effects once you plug in Noster.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
We should do more brainstorming around that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I remain super stoked about this. Each day goes by, I hear new ideas. They all build upon each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just becoming more optimistic about Americans spending Bitcoin at Square point of sale systems, and that'll create pressure on other point of sale solutions to come up with Bitcoin solutions.
And just, I mean, I'm seeing also more of my startups that are in other countries are starting to think about this as well. It's like, hey, is now the time to start doing payment processing in Mexico or Brazil or Philippines? And, you know, historically it wasn't really working, but maybe this is going to be the kick that, and I will say, you know, I was always a little bearish on this. Like I always thought, and I still kind of do, that like something like AI agents or something internet first was going to be what really takes it off. But who knows? Maybe this is the kick. I mean, the beautiful thing is, it doesn't really matter.
I also have been relatively bearish for the reasons you said, and just especially for like American buying coffee is to me seems like the last use case.
Oh, come on, it's the most important because thing.
Because there's already good payment solutions, and I think the key is the merchant is the one that has to get sold because it makes sense for their business, and then they'll be empowered, but also motivated to sell their customers to spend in Bitcoin. And now that we have really good user experience for many spending wallet options, there's still a first time cost and hurdle for a normal person to get Bitcoin in a wallet on their phone. It's not that bad. And then the experience once they have it installed is like quite good, actually.
Can we actually pause there? I want to talk about something. So I was a little bit disappointed and shocked this week. For a number of reasons. So, not to shift us all the way to the NBA, but Monday.
Nice. Transition.
I'm curious to see how Draymond fits into.
We're getting there. So, on Monday, I went to see the Grizzlies Warriors game. Very exciting.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry about the outcome for you.
We lost, but I had a couple of takeaways. You know, one takeaway, the Warriors looked good overall, very balanced scoring. The Grizzlies, I mean, Ja's nice. He's always nice. But until we get a center, until we get Edie or BC back, like we don't have any rebounding. Like it is what it is. We're still 3-2, like, you know. But yeah, the Warriors look nice. My second takeaway is that Draymond Green is a piece of absolute trash. Like, fuck that guy. Like, dude, I generally like the Warriors. I never like understood why people didn't like Draymond. He went behind on one of our players and like literally took his legs out from under him while he was going out. Like a dangerous play, like the kind of play that could end someone's career. And like, okay, sometimes you hard foul, you didn't mean to. Like, if he had come over and dap the dude up, whatever. No. First of all, it was a flagrant one. It should have been a flagrant two. Like, that dude shouldn't even be in the league. So he comes over and then he starts showboating and taunting and laughing about it. I'm like, dude, you could have ended a guy's career and you're laughing? Like, nah, trash. Absolute trash. So that's my thought on Draymond. But number three is the guy that I went with. You know, and if he's listening, I'm not going to dox you. And, you know, shout out to you. You know who you are. But someone that's been in Bitcoin a long time. And, you know, I grabbed the tickets and I was like, you know, just send me Max at getalbi.com. And, you know, he comes back and yeah, I certainly don't think this homie's trying to stiff me, but I'm like, man ain't paying, what's going on? And he comes by and he's like, look, I'm trying to get my Albi to work. It's really tricky. It's like, do I have to open a channel? And it's like, okay. And he's like, but like, I don't know if I really need a channel. Do I get my Bitcoin back if I close it? I was like, all right, look, if you're not a power user for Albi, I get it. I'll use something simpler. Just go to Cash App. He's like, well, I haven't used Cash App in a long time. I was like, okay, Moon Wallet. And then we had to get anyways, long story short, like after like multiple back and forths, like this person's not a noob. I was just like, fuck it. Here's like an on-chain address. Just send me that. It was disappointing. And so I think that to me was, it was a good realization of like, we have a long ways to go of just like a normal person. Like I totally forgot this because I've been in Lightning for so long. But yeah, it was disappointing to see.
Yeah, I mean, DK's also had problems in the past. Not you personally, but when you're trying to, maybe I should just take this off. I don't know. What do you guys think?
We have a couple of funny comments, by the way. We got one person saying, for a second, I thought we have two Maxes on the show. Yeah. And then Matthew says, DK, if you need someone to talk to during this segment.
Right.
Sports.
But you've had problems with similar experiences where friends, colleagues, whatever, you're trying to get them to make a payment to you or you're trying to pay them or whatever. And it falls apart. I mean, we definitely haven't. Yeah, I feel very uncomfortable today in this gear. So please give me feedback.
I feel so uncomfortable, my gosh.
Yeah. All right. Please give me feedback.
Grab it right there, DK. What's going on? Too much time on me. No.
I mean, we have gone from there are no good user. I couldn't, even if I know what I'm doing, I can't demonstrate a good user experience. So now we have multiple products that do deliver good user experiences. That's a fact now. But we're still not to the point where they all interoperate
right.
perfectly together.
Yeah.
And even the really good user experiences still have some warts. But the progress has been phenomenal, and the trajectory is really good. So, it's definitely the timing is right to like push for payments, get people doing payments. And I do think normies can have a spending wallet on their phone now. I'm curious why you didn't recommend Phoenix as an option.
I've just never used Phoenix.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not French. Like, I'm just kidding. I like the French, but I don't know.
Or Lexi's not. I think Lexi's still invite only. But Lexi and Phoenix are both good user experiences as well.
But is Phoenix? Don't you still have to like pay to open a channel or no?
Like basically, you should just deposit like a few $100 in your wallet, and then after that, it's a breeze.
Yeah,
it's like quite simple. As long as you're comfortable starting with like, oh, I want to put a couple $100 spending. Do I have an issue?
No.
Okay. You're laughing
I'm
at me.
I'm appreciating so. You've got it kind of riding on your face just the right way.
I don't know. Anyway, for the use case of like you fund a spending wallet a couple $100, I think right. Phoenix is great.
But if it's
like, oh, you're a brand, I received a zap.
Yeah.
As a brand new user, then not too much.
But to be clear for Phoenix, you're talking about someone, and in this case, this guy could have been a good example, but someone who's familiar enough with Bitcoin, they already have some Bitcoin, they are comfortable making an on-chain transaction to start.
Yeah, this would be like, you know, you have a couple $100, or I mean, you have maybe thousands on Coinbase or Cash App, and you want to put a couple $100 in a spending wallet, then Lexi and Phoenix are good user experience.
Well, and that's another thing I didn't even think to, you know, push on that is like if you have Coinbase or Kraken or whatever, like you should be able to also just do Lightning directly there too.
Yeah, if you have Coinbase app on your phone.
So
Cash App.
So there's almost two different user experiences we need to solve for. There's the person who understands Bitcoin. And I, by the way, saw on Stacker News, they did something really cool. I did not go to BitConf or TagConf this year. I haven't actually never been to TagConf, but it sounds pretty good. But anyways, they had a Stacker News booth there. And apparently I think they were like serving salsa and like, right. It sounded like a lot of fun. But that was I read their takeaways, and one of their biggest takeaways was there was even a TabConf, which is like a fairly, I would say, one of the more technically sophisticated conferences. There were a huge number, maybe even a majority, but like, if not a majority, like a large percentage of users who were super familiar with Bitcoin, but still could not get a Lightning wallet set up to start with Stacker News. So I just think, so there's two really interesting cases. There's a lot of people that need that. Like, I have some Bitcoin. How do I make an on-chain transaction? Maybe Phoenix is still the best. Hopefully Lexi soon. Albie's amazing, but you need to be committed enough to open that channel. And I think there's some other opportunities. I know folks we've been talking to, maybe this is their moment finally just to get that node up really, really quickly. But then I think, what about for the absolute noob who doesn't even have Bitcoin yet? For me, the only thing I really feel comfortable saying there is Cash App. Do you guys agree or disagree with that?
Well, again, I mean, for certain people, that's a great choice. And others, it's not a great choice. If you're not American, it's not a great choice.
Sure. But for folks in the US who don't have Bitcoin yet, who you want to like,
there's still so it's a great choice because it's a reputable brand, has a long track record. It works well. It's got I can quibble in the UX, but overall good UX. It's a great, easy way to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, too. Exactly.
But you do have to KYC and onboard, and there's friction in onboarding, but you pretty much have that no matter what you do if you want to buy Bitcoin. So if you're truly new to Bitcoin and you need to acquire Bitcoin, and your option, your choice to acquire is to buy, then Cash App's a very good choice.
Yeah, cool. But by the way, two thoughts on that. One, like, I hope we get to the point where you onboard into Lightning first. I think that's going to be very powerful for people that just want spending and like, mm-hmm. You don't even have to know what on-chain is. The second thing is on Cash App, I'm sure you guys have thought of this, but like what will be super, super dope is stage 1, 2, 1, when I just scan a QR code, it didn't even ask me, I don't even have to buy Bitcoin first. Like you can just like click a box and it's like, do you want to use the Bitcoin network? And it does all that on the back end. And then eventually what will be super cool is when I have some Bitcoin in there and eventually I can just do like, I don't know, like whatever the stable coin or dollar solution is on Lightning Network, I can just keep my Bitcoin, do auto loans and use that to pay that off.
But I mean, let's expand more on what you're saying, the onboarding. Like there's all kinds of different people. Like how are you imagining people? I mean, clearly the use case that has been common is like I KYC and I connect my bank account and put dollars in the exchange and then I buy Bitcoin.
Yeah. So imagine.
But what are other cases
So imagine, for example, like right now when you go to a Square merchant, they often will say Cash App Pay as an option, which I assume is no fees. I mean, I know it's no fees for Square since it's all internal. And so, you know, I can just pay with Cash App. What would be really cool is if they just say, hey, you know, I scan a QR code, any Bitcoin QR code or any Square QR code, and it just says, do you want to save on or whatever? Like, I don't know what the UX would have to be because the merchant, well, if the merchant's already offering it to you and it just says, hey, do you want to use Bitcoin in the back end? We can auto buy Bitcoin and just do that, or even just do it for you, like check a box and like, we'll buy and like send Bitcoin for you. And then maybe then there's not like a learning opportunity to suggest, oh, would you like to learn more about Bitcoin and buy some or something? I don't know.
Sorry, say that again. I'm at a store.
Yeah, I'm at a store and there's a QR code and I can just like scan it with Cash App and like you can have the option. Maybe I have to opt into the first time, but it just buys and uses Bitcoin for me automatically. Like, I don't have to buy Bitcoin and have that.
Oh, meaning I already have Cash App.
Yeah.
And there's I have dollars in my Cash App.
Yeah, you've already got
the
KYC.
I pay with dollars.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just all like, I just scan any QR code and just like the Bitcoin happens on the back end. I don't even know about it.
Yeah.
I still want a great gifting flow.
Yeah, I agree.
Like,
yeah.
That has not been solved, not even close.
I still, and an example of that would be gift cards. Like, I still think it's crazy that if I walk into like a CVS or Walgreens or whatever store where there's a rack with Starbucks and Apple and all these brands that people know with the gift cards, why is there not a Bitcoin gift card there?
Well, there is, right? Isn't that what Azteca does? I don't think they do it in the US as much, but.
Well, they're not in the US.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that. I mean, they have that. You go to their website and you can pay to buy Bitcoin and then you go to a local store like in Brazil or whatever.
Right.
And then you show them the voucher. Or actually, sorry, you pay then. So I go to a website and I say, I want to buy like $100 of Bitcoin. Then I get, I print out a voucher. I go to the local store with like a code.
Oh, yeah.
I pay the local store. Here's my cash, local cash. And then that tells Azteca, okay, give them the Bitcoin.
Do they not have the flow though? You don't have to the website. You can just take cash to the store and get, I don't know, like they print off a voucher for you in real time.
I think it's what I said. So, that, I mean, I think that's also cool, but that's not, they're not doing gift cards in Iraq. In fact, Million actually created gift cards in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
The founder of Primal. And that was 2019. It was right when I started at Block. I tried that experience out and is it brilliant onboarding experience. It was fantastic. It just worked great. Like I had a...
What happened to it? Is it still around? Or?
No. He stopped working on that and then he started Primal. But the user experience was great. You had a gift card and then it gave you simple instructions, download this app from the App Store. It was super easy. Like I think you entered a code or scanned a QR code or something like that. And then it deposited the Bitcoin in your app. It was self custody, but it was just like it's a dead simple, like a normal,
it's cool.
Normal person could do it. It's a hard business to start up though, because there's like one or two distributors. They have all the power. They get all the money. They get all the margins.
I see.
It's like Black Hawk.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not a good business to enter. Certainly as a startup, and even as like a larger company. But nonetheless, as a product that I'd like to see in stores, like that's missing.
And is anybody talked to? Is it Black Hawk? I think you're right. Yeah. Has anybody talked to them about Bitcoin?
Presumably Million.
So he was using one of the main distributors.
I don't know, but I mean,
okay.
It was
Canada only for his.
Oh, okay.
And others may or may not are doing that.
Million, speaking if you're listening, maybe you can give us a little TLDR in the chat.
Right, yeah. Speaking of Bitcoin-related businesses that I think maybe you or Steve may have proposed a Bitcoin savings bond as a new startup opportunity.
Well, Haley was saying she had a bad experience.
With what?
With kind of U.S. savings bonds.
It's really frustrating.
Yeah, that's okay.
I like those U.S. bonds.
She was had a bad paper bond experience.
What just happened? Traditional U.S. savings bond type things?
Yeah.
With paper? But did you propose somebody should do this with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, why doesn't that exist?
Because it seems like...
Why doesn't that exist?
You get,
I mean, as a kid, I recall, like... You go to your bank and you like a common gift to children or babies or young children or whatever. It was like you pay $500, you give the bank $500, you get back this like piece of paper that then like you know, 15 years later or whatever, you go back to the bank and say, here's my piece of paper, and then you get $1,000.
Right. So it has a built-in yield or interest rate on the bond.
Yep. And, you know, that was like pretty compelling in terms of like, here's a gift I can give someone. They're young. They can't screw it up.
They can't take this to Vegas.
Kind of like time locked. And then they get it in the future, and then they'll really appreciate it in the future. That's like a nice gift for like grandma or grandpa to give their grandson or granddaughter. Why isn't there a Bitcoin equivalent of that? And especially because you can take advantage of cool things with Bitcoin, like time locking. It's built into the protocol. You can like literally lock it up so no one in the world can spend it until a certain date or whatever. A product wouldn't have to use that, but that type of stuff is possible with programmable money.
I thought you were talking about using the fact that the Bitcoin forward CAGR is probably 20, 30, 40%, something much larger than people would expect as yield on a bond. And so you could actually have the headline number on the bond could be quite high compared to how much money you're putting in, right?
Isn't that what we were talking about with like the bit bonds and the government was trying to create their own with a little bit of a Bitcoin kicker to do that, blend Bitcoin in?
I remember that thing happening. Was that about a year ago or so?
Yeah,
I do remember that being a topic of discussion. I don't recall exactly what.
The thing that's always amusing to me, and I get kind of why it works because most people are not yet sold, but it's always like, you know, with MicroStrategy and Bitbonds and all of these things, like the whole assumption is like, to your point, it's like you can get these really nice yields just because like the Bitcoin CAGR is so damn high. So it's always just kind of like, hey, here's the product idea. We take this incredible asset with incredible returns and we water it down with some other crap. And then we give you like the kicker on that. And I get it because most people are used to the old school stuff, but
In a sense, I guess that's it's a very negative view. I would recommend, yes, people first buy Bitcoin, but if you aren't yet fully sold or you're still learning about it, but you're like, look, I think SOFR this week dropped to 4.25%. So maybe spreads on SOFR in the range of 5, 6, 7%.
What's SOFR?
The overnight lending rate, you know, the Fed just dropped a quarter point. When was it? Wednesday or Thursday or whatever.
I didn't see that. Yeah.
So people are accustomed to like, you take SOFR plus a point or two or three. So, you know, 4 and change, you're talking 7% is what people see as like a reasonable interest rate, right? And with Bitcoin, if you believe that it's going to be 20 or 30 or more, right, percent per year, you can actually build products that take advantage of that difference and give people something much better than the maybe 6 or 7% they could otherwise get.
No, I mean, I get it. And that's the other side. That's a more positive, like charitable.
Also, I mean, there's just different use cases. Like if I'm a grandpa and want to give my grandchild a gift that will bear fruit later, I can't just like go to Coinbase or Cash App and buy Bitcoin. That doesn't meet my needs.
Yeah.
So I'm happy if I'm net paying 10% fees or losing like the last 10% gain over 10 years or whatever, so be it.
No, totally. And I actually like that idea even more. Like, I get what you're saying. It makes sense for the old world finance. I was saying you had this idea where they like take like 90% crap, i.e. like dollars or treasuries, mix that with a little bit of Bitcoin so you get some of that sweet CAGR. Mm. I like this idea a lot. I think this actually could flow into your gifting idea too of like a product where it's just like one of the products is just a time lock. It's Bitcoin, but it's time locked. And like it's designed for grandparents giving to their kids.
It almost feels like it could be part of the strategy suite because they keep introducing new products to new segments, right?
Yeah.
And obviously this is a very different, grandma and grandpa are very different than, trillion-dollar institutional funds, but they already are now introducing things that are intended for like, they're going after like high yield money market accounts.
Credit, yeah.
Or, for retail. So this just seems like an extension of their strategy.
Did we ever, by the way, get the very specifics? I know I shared a couple links and you're like, yeah, it's already been known. Do you feel like that's already well understood by everybody and it's just nonsense to revisit? Or
which part?
The stretch, MicroStrategy's stretch product. And
the dollar.
Well, I don't think
the return on capital.
I don't think we've talked about the taxes on the show.
We talked about stretch, but we didn't talk about taxes.
So I don't know. I don't think anything new has happened in this past week, but I saw at least one or two threads that I think I shared at least one of them where people were breaking down how the stretch product is much, much better than just the 10% that you see as the headline number on the stretch yield. But it's, you know, you could think of it as closer to 20% because of the way taxes work and the specifics of how that product is structured, which I wouldn't claim to be an expert or giving tax advice on this particular thing. But my understanding, and I want to hear if this is your understanding too, my understanding is you take Stretch, and Stretch is nominally considered to be like a about a 10% yield. It can be up or down. It could be 10.25 or 9.75. But it's roughly, you can think of it 10% for simplification. And let's say you put some amount, you know, call it $100K or $1 million or whatever into Stretch. Each year you get paid out that 10%. So if you, let's call it $1 million, you you get $100K of yield per year. But
because who doesn't have a spare million or, to put in?
Okay. 10K, whatever. Just scales up and down.
I was gonna say you toss a billy in there. And, you know, it's cool. You know,
you can scale up and down. It's kind of
a spare 100 mil. I get a yield. It's cool. Sweet. Trilly.
Okay, sorry. $10. You put $10 into this.
Win. I don't know if I got $10.
And at the end of the year, you've earned a $1 yield. Mm. Every quarter, you get 25 cents.
Oh.
Does this example making you feel more pleb? it's all going to be a wash in the tax moment, though. The point I was making is this. Let's call it $100.
Okay.
If you get too small, the taxes kind of become a wash.
$100K.
So your first year, you've earned $10,000 in yield, right? But my understanding is, I think that's return on capital. That's not dividend income. So it doesn't get taxed as income. Mm. I don't know if it is taxed as something.
That's the claim. I'd say, since none of us are CPAs or lawyers.
Yeah, do your own research.
Do your own research. But like, the claim is it's return on capital. It's not. Would not be treated as income tax. And as return on capital...
It's just cap gains?
No, it's not cap gains tax.
What is it?
It reduces your cost basis on the asset that you bought. So if we spend $100K to buy it, then the first year I get $10,000 out as my 10%. And now my cost basis went from $100K to $90K.
Wait a second. What voodoo is this?
So at some point in the future, if I sell that, I'm going to have to pay capital gains on the delta between the 90K and the 100K, right?
And this treatment is independent of Stretch. It just happens to be that Stretch.
I'm not sure I understand this. Capital. So okay, let's go through this example. I have 100K, I get 10K out. Now, when I sell it, I have 110K that I'm selling.
No. You bought 100K.
Yeah.
If you sold it the day you bought it, you'd have no capital gains. If you sold it 6 months after you bought it, you'd have basically no capital gains, because it's basically like 100K.
It's supposed to stay. In theory, it stays at 100K.
Yeah, okay, let's call it 100K.
Up and down a little bit. But basically, you have no cap gains, right? If you now you've taken your four distributions throughout the year, and now you have 10K that you've been given as like yield, right?
Oh, and to be clear, that's separate. That's like cash.
That's cash that went to you, and you still own 100K in Stretch, but now your cost basis on Stretch is no longer 100K. It got reduced to 90K. So if you ever sell it, you have to pay the cap gains difference between the 100K and the 90K.
Yeah. And then the claim is that that can continue until the cost basis goes to zero, and then you can't keep doing it. You can't create a negative cost basis. So after that, but the claim then is still, so let's say after 10 years, I got 100K paid out to me, my cost basis is zero. 11th year, I get another 10K paid out to me. The claim is that I only owe capital gains tax on that 10K, not income tax. So even in the 11th year, it's more attractive than a typical bond or savings account.
So you're basically paying no tax the first 10 years, assuming you keep holding Stretch.
Deferred tax.
Okay.
So you're not paying tax, but it's deferred.
The 11th year, you get another 10K payment, and you pay that as cap gains on the 11th year. And if I ever sell the Stretch, then I do have to pay cap gains
on the difference between the zero and the value, or the
cost basis.
Your cost basis has gone to zero if you've done it for 10 years.
Okay.
Your cost basis has gone to zero.
Got it.
Now you have to pay capital gains on the whole thing.
I gotcha.
But remember, you had 10 years where you weren't paying capital gains on that.
And so if you believe the dollar is going to hyperinflate, it's just like, oh, I'd much rather defer taxes to the future and like paying like.
Deferring tax is almost always a good idea. Right?
You know, okay, so my high-level take on all this, and I said this many times, not to be a broken record on the show, it's great. I'm glad there are people out there that are, you know, and like, hats off to Saylor, he's a great financial engineer. It still honestly, just going back to the kind of the purity of the white paper,
yeah.
It makes me sad and frustrated that these, I mean, I get it. And like, God bless, great job, like figure all the loopholes out. But like, wouldn't it be wonderful to one day live in a world where it's just like the electronic, that there are no all these fancy taxes and loopholes. It's like super simple. Maybe there's no income tax. Maybe it's just taxes on what you buy. Super simple. I don't know. It frustrates me that you have to be an expert to play these like tricky games. And like, it's always a way to funnel money from the poor to the
rich. We'll have to do an episode on taxes.
Yeah. No, I definitely not.
Because I'll challenge you to come up with a fair, simple, fair proposal.
Yeah.
Well, one simple,
I don't
fair.
Think, I don't if think you, you'll be able to.
Yeah. What you're talking about is very regressive. So if you pay tax on the things that you buy.
You could also do a land tax, right? That's like the one thing. Yeah. It's like my whole thing is I'm not an expert. I'm not saying I propose. I mean, one idea is one day, imagine there's...
We're all like disclaimers.
Imagine there's no heaven. Imagine there's no country. Like, imagine there is no tax. That's where I think we could get to one day. And still, there's better quality of life for everyone because everything is super cheap and abundance. Yeah. Like that, that's a world that we could shoot for. But I think it's
within reach. I don't think that's purely fictional fantasy. I think it's possible.
Well, I certainly hope so, right? Yeah. But then I think on the other
build
hand...
Build what I want.
Just knock it into existence.
Like that.
But I also think that like, and without being a tax, you know, whatever, like I think you can look at like, kind of like our debate on IP, right? It's like, I hate IP because it's artificial. It does not follow the flow of reality. Like information wants to be free. Trying to force information which wants to be free into IP makes absolutely no sense. Similarly, I think with things like taxes, it's like, I'm not anti-taxes, but you should think about where does it actually naturally flow. So for a state, right, like, and you know, there are things that the state in theory for a while has probably been the best thing to administer. If you own land, property tax probably makes sense. You can't run away from property tax. And like, if you are in a community, you should probably, whatever, pay for some of the basic services like the roads, which I know everyone's always curious who's going to build those, and the water systems and all that. But like, I don't know. I think the more we get away from fancy loopholes, which end up just funneling money to the uber wealthy and like, And people that are uber wealthy, not because they actually did anything, but just because they know all the tricks. That's what's so frustrating. That's when I come
people
back.
People who have like $1 million just experiment with stretch.
Yeah, who are these people, Steve? I don't even know. But you know, I come back to that. That's what I love. The simplicity of Martin Luther and his theses, the simplicity of Satoshi and his theses, you know, is a world where, you know, yeah, like you don't have to be on the inside to be able to thrive.
I'm not opposed to taxes. I'm only opposed to government.
You heard it here first. Okay, guys, I know we're running short on time. I don't know what other topics you had, but I wanted to make sure we cover one thing on the
some very important things, and we only have 12 minutes.
Well, this is important on the Bitcoin Merchant Association, because we did not come back and follow up on what I was most excited about last week, which is the Advent calendar. So this idea of, regardless of our own community, and I had an idea, maybe a way for Square to participate as well. So I think it's cool we do sort of the cash bomb. Every day we pick a restaurant or whatever. We all go and spend our Bitcoin there together as a community. We get other people in the Bay Area to come out and do the same. Maybe we also get them with the Nostr address so people can like just bomb them money for, you know, every day of December. But I was also going to say we could do this for different communities. Like, it could be cool. Square could get involved as well as they're turning it on. They could do like a matching program or something. Like, they could just, or whatever, like, hey, we're going to cash bond $10,000 a day for each of these merchants as well. And then, or we match, like, whatever the community comes up with. And then you can really, I mean, obviously that's not going to scale forever, but that's how
you need to bootstrap.
That's
right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's how you can kickstart. Yeah. Like,
I mean, Square did $1 million giveaway today.
I didn't even know that.
Well, I saw that in the chat, but I didn't read it. What happened?
Well, it's the math. The first 20,000 merchants that turn on, I think it was the conversions feature, gets $50 deposited
into
their
account.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool.
So something like that, so, like to support the
Cash App's account. Done like Cash App Fridays for many years. So your proposal is definitely consistent with what Cash App has done before. So
awesome.
I'll make sure the Square team watches this segment.
Miles, if you're listening.
Here's your idea. Spiral Sync doing a project too, I mentioned. I'll make sure that team hears about it. And then it also could be, you know, a good idea for one of the startups that are targeting merchants and spending.
And maybe we could have like multiple companies come in and put in. I just think if you can just like blow people out of the water at these first, you know, whatever, the first month, that's going to set a strong precedent. So.
Yeah. Can we talk about chain split stuff? Because like, it's kind of, I'm aware that it exists. I have not followed it closely. And I feel like Steve has followed this closely.
Let me talk about this.
Max,
well, the drama continues. But I mean, I think actually the framing, the current event is the BIP 444 proposal, which is a proposal to change consensus rules and fork Bitcoin. And then it gets into the question of like, is it a soft fork or is it a hard fork or is it a contentious fork, which I think is what you were interested in. The reason why Max doesn't want to talk about this is because it's just part of the continued Ocean drama, Knots drama, Core V30 drama. That this proposal is like in BIP 444 is intended to eliminate the spam and the bad stuff and the things that people that care about Bitcoin as money don't want in the blockchain.
All of us care about Bitcoin as money. The things that particular...
Yeah, that's one thing that's lost on the the camp that is positioning themselves as Bitcoin is money and anti-spam think the other side doesn't care about Bitcoin as money, but that's just wrong.
That's just false.
Mm-hmm. I would say the vast majority of people in the core camp or the other camp is that it's not possible to get rid of this, or the solution to get rid of it is the fees that are already built into the white paper and the original Bitcoin system. That is the solution. The problem right now with JPEGs getting the blockchain is that people aren't spending their fucking Bitcoin. We need more economic activity. Everyone complaining should actually go out and go to their Steak and Shakes, their Square, merchants that use Square, and spend Bitcoin. Go get them to get the merchants to enable Bitcoin.
Yeah, and by the way, I would take those guys a lot more seriously if they start posting receipts of doing stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what all of us can agree on. Bitcoin used as money, and all of us should become advocates and do that. That's the healthiest thing. And like, get off Twitter, stop yelling at each other, go in the real world and spend Bitcoin. All right,
I'm sorry, I'm not.
I've learned that that's a good. I'm saying good things. All right,
I'm not Gen Alpha,
but in any case. The BIP 444 is the intention is to prevent bad stuff getting in, but it's a Band-Aid. It has all kinds of holes. I mean, immediately after it was proposed, Peter Todd got a transaction mined that is BIP 444 compliant, and it contains the entire text of BIP 444. So it spams the chains with a BIP 444 compliant transaction.
Right.
So we're not going to stop that. Except with fees. We need to use Bitcoin as money. So that's that proposal. But it raised the question of forks, which I think is what you specifically were interested in. And longtime developer Waxwing had a post that gave his interpretation of these different forks.
I was just going to say, I think there's, we're Bitcoiners. There's Bitcoiners who are interested in this topic of like, what happens in the case of a fork? Do I need to make decisions? Probably like, being in self-custody means you can actually make decisions, and being with a third-party custodian means you have to follow along with whatever decisions they choose to present you at the time they choose to present you.
Yeah.
And that can have real economic impact.
Yep.
If you...
Okay.
This isn't very really, personal for people.
Right? I agree. And we don't have to get in the weeds either to answer this question. And I agree this question should be relevant to anyone who owns Bitcoin should understand what we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
And some of us lived through this in 2017, 2018 era. I think the three of us did, and probably quite a few in our audience, but many people didn't. And that's when Bitcoin Cash did fork off from Bitcoin. And it did create two coins. And what that meant, if you held your own Bitcoin in self-custody, then prior to the fork, then you actually got two. If let's say you held 10 Bitcoin at the time, you then had 10 BTC and 10 BCH. At the time, that wasn't crazy.
10,000, you mean, right?
Yeah. So, I didn't use like a million Bitcoin as my.
You just did, but okay.
21 million.
So, but you'd have 10 Bitcoin of each, and you can do whatever you want with them. Now you have to be somewhat sophisticated. First of all, you're already self-custodying. You also have to run your own node. And for for Bitcoin Cash, you had to download Bitcoin Cash Bitcoin software. You couldn't use Bitcoin Core's Bitcoin software because it only dealt with BTC. So it required sophistication, but it really was empowering. First of all, you're self-sovereign. You're guaranteed that you got 10 of each. you could immediately transact with each. So if you were a believer in BTC and you thought BCH was a joke, you could immediately sell it on an exchange. You could transfer it to an exchange and sell it.
And get more Bitcoin.
And buy BTC.
Buy more BTC or vice versa. If you thought BCH was the right direction or whether as an investment or the right technology direction, vision for Bitcoin, you could sell, dump all your BTC and accumulate a lot of BCH. But it's very empowering to do that.
Or you could just hold both and just like...
Or you can hold both. So the safe thing to do is hold both. If you have conviction one way or the other, then you can like dump some or all and put it in the other coin. And as we describe in the Bitcoin Consensus Analysis Project, BCAP, which Lynn Alden and Crypto Ren and myself worked on last year, it's at the margin is what matters for determining which coin sort of wins in the market. And so it's those people who actually have the ability to sell and, of course, the willingness to sell one fork and then double up on the other fork. That's extremely powerful position to be in. If you're not willing to take that risk or you don't have conviction, you just simply hold Bitcoin. You just want to hope to keep holding whatever Bitcoin becomes. You can just hold both. Now, a lot of people hold Bitcoin with a custodian. There, you don't have this power.
Right.
You are not in control. You can't split the coins. You don't have access to both. You can't immediately dump one of them at potentially like premium prices. And you're just beholden to that custodian's choices. And what we saw in 2017, 2018 is different custodians will make different choices. Some acted quickly to make the other coin available to you to withdraw. Others were slow. Others never made it available. Coinbase. Because there was Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Diamond. There were like...
ESV, wasn't that one?
Well, that came later, but that came later off of a BCH fork. But at the time, forking off of BTC, there were like 20 different versions, and it was a long tail, right? So even Coinbase didn't make most of those available. So we all, like if we had any Bitcoin on Coinbase at the time, we lost money. We never got access to that. We couldn't hold it, sell it.
And by the way, I actually think this is one of the great, the more I hear you talking now, one of the greatest risks to Bitcoin, the more we're talking about this, whether or not you think this particular one is an orchestrated attack against Bitcoin, like it's going to come at some point. And I'm actually kind of concerned because in those days, there were a lot of whales that held in self-custody. From what I've, gathered, it seems like a lot maybe have transferred to ETFs or something like that because for a variety of reasons, they don't want to hold it themselves. They don't want that risk. But that becomes scary because as you have the ETFs and the custodians like Coinbase control more and more, maybe there were enough of the hardcore diehards that really believe in the values in 2017. Do we have enough in 2025? Maybe. What about in 2030? Like that's a very concerning trend.
I agree the trend's concerning, but again, the analysis done in the BCAP project I think is heartening because even if the number of OG whales that self-custody is reducing over time, it's nowhere even remotely close to zero right now.
Yeah, that's true.
And those whales that self-custody have outsized power in such a situation when there's a fork because they can act quickly. And the BlackRocks and Coinbases of the world are highly unlikely.
Yeah.
They have teams of lawyers. Like think about BlackRock. First of all, they don't even hold the Bitcoin. So they aren't in control. It's Coinbase. Secondly, they don't own the Bitcoin. Their customers do. They're highly regulated. They have a gazillion lawyers. They're not going to like on day one of a fork, dump fork B and double down on fork A. That would be suicide. What if they're wrong? The whole company
just lost customers.
They would literally just disappear off the map. They're not going to do that. They're going to move slowly. They're going to hold both. They're going to let things play out. Right.
But you could imagine, right? Like these guys are effectively, I'm sure like just imagine the state, there was a big state attack. I'm not saying they would do it overnight, but like fine, they can't move for a year. So be it. If there aren't enough of the hardcore values, self-custody whales left, like it wouldn't happen like on day one, but
we need the self-custody whales to still self-custody, still be whales and still, and still care. Agreed. Another concern, though, is like if there's a extreme state attack, then first of all, the state can tell BlackRock, you have to choose fork B, not fork A.
That's what I'm saying.
They can also, all the exchanges, they can be like, you can't, we don't allow you to have a free market.
Right.
Right. Right. And that's where tying this back into merchant adoption and using Bitcoin as everyday money, becomes super important long term, even if all you hear about is number go up and investor, because that allows for price discovery millions of times per day throughout the world in very decentralized ways. You just go to Pingal Coffee, you're discovering price. And in that exchange, you're determining what is Bitcoin.
Yes.
Am I using fork A or fork B?
Yep.
So two people. Yeah. All right. I'm winning today. And so, you know, of course, that single exchange between me and Pink Owl isn't going to determine the future of Bitcoin, but the millions and millions of instances of that do matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, again, anyone worried about spam, anyone worried about BlackRock attacks or state attacks, we got to start spending money. Do your part. Get out there, convince merchants, spend Bitcoin for a long-term healthy.
I like that.
And further, if you should be self-custodying, and if you do self-custody, if you choose to hold both chains in a fork, it is a vote for both. It is a vote of I don't know, or a vote that either one is fine.
Yeah.
And I think you sort of made the comment like, we'll wait and see. If you don't have conviction, then you kind of have to take that position, I understand. But if you can learn and build conviction about which one you think is the real Bitcoin, the one that matters, you actually can generate yield.
Yes.
So you have more Bitcoin. It's rare in the world that you can, in a fair way, generate yield on your Bitcoin ownership. And this is one of the few.
Very good point. And it is a sense of a vote. I often hear people talking about voting and Bitcoin. They'll either misapply it, though. They don't know it, though. So hopefully they listen and learn here. But one is miners, that miners have a vote somehow. Like during the activation of a new consensus change, there's this signaling process that's been done historically through the Bitcoin Core software. And it's when miners signal, yep, we're ready for this change. Because to reduce safety risks in activating a new consensus rule that has consensus, you want miners to support it. Because if it's split, then you can get unintended forks and a total disaster, right? So there's this signaling process. And so some people interpret that as miners get to vote whether we get that change. And it's not a vote. Because if they, it's more like if they do signal, first of all, the signal is just a trust me, bro.
Yeah.
It is. They're signaling through the blocks they mine, but they could be lying.
Yeah.
All they're saying is like, we've upgraded the software to support this activation of this change, but they could be lying. So it's total trust me, bro. But even if they're lying, I mean, it's like you, by assuming they're telling the truth and then them doing it and then reaching a certain threshold, like 95%, it's, even though you're not assured that's true, it's still safer than not doing that process at all. But that's all it is. It's not a vote. Because like, let's say that they don't reach a certain signal. You can have economic nodes begin to adopt the fork and also and basically campaign and say, we're going to reject the blocks you're creating that don't support this change you want. So it's a very complex power struggle, but it's not a vote by miners. The other vote that's very common.
That's not a vote.
That's not a vote. Thank you.
But often confused.
Perceived vote is this year with people, thinking that this spinning up running Bitcoin software is a vote.
Like running a node is not a vote.
Running a node is not a vote. And depending on what you're doing with that node, it ranges from like inconsequential to very important. And so like part of the Knots drama, people that are supporters of the Knots side of this drama love to tout the percentage of market share that is running Knots. Now, I'll definitely acknowledge as like a social media campaign and like an activist campaign, it's like a compelling story to tell. But it's meaningless across a number of dimensions. One is that while it sounds good, we actually don't know how many people are actually running Knots, because literally one individual could spin up tens of thousands of Bitcoin nodes in AWS and affect that metric. I'm not saying that's what's happening, It could very well be each individual is doing that, but I'm just saying we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
So it's, you know, and then secondly, even if there's like 500,000 individuals who run knots, and there's only like 70,000 people continue to run core or whatever, if all they're doing is just spinning up and running and not receiving Bitcoin, then they're literally meaningless.
Yep.
Because like, I think if someone was from the knots camp here, they'd argue, oh, but we're relaying transactions, we can set relay policy and stuff. But with a sufficient sized Bitcoin core network, transactions will be relayed. It doesn't matter if there's 50,000, 500,000, 50 million knots nodes, I'll still find paths through the network to get to miners with a transaction that I want to mine.
I also just want to throw out, because I mean, you said people should be self-custodying. So I just want to say, I'm not sure I always agree with that. Like, we did that whole episode about like diversifying. I think self-custody is, you know, can be a good option if you know what you're doing. I think it can be a horrible option if you don't. And even if you do, for security reasons and other, I think it does make sense. That's why I think a lot of whales have moved into things like ETFs or custody. And I get it. Like, it totally makes sense to have someone else take a lot of that burden for you. But if you are going to do that, I think, you know, we've said this many times and I just will keep beating this horse forever. Like, know who you're working with, know your business, know who's running it and what their values are, right? Like, at the end of the day, you know, people like Brian Armstrong and Coinbase have shown their colors over and over again. I know where they're going to go if there is a fork or, you know, I mean, yes, they're probably going to give customers the right to do what they want, but like, don't trust people, right? Like, I will say this over and over again. Look at a company like a River or an Alex Leishman, Block, people like Jack Dorsey and Alex, who may give you that option to make that choice. I'm not saying they will for sure, but I'm just saying all custody is not the same. All exchanges are not created equal. Do your own research. Where you do your business, where you bring your business, what those people's values are matters.
Did we cover what you wanted to cover on forks?
Yeah.
I think that's a good... You went a different direction than I was anticipating, but I think it's the right direction. For a broader audience. So thanks for doing that.
Sure.
a few more things I wanted to talk about. Where's it?
Matthew's asking.
I got to ask this question. Okay, all right. So Matthew asked a very important question. He says, before you end, Max, what is that mask? What is it made from? And how much DMT was used in the process? I'll answer all three. So this mask right here, for those of you who can't see it, let me bring my friend up here. This is the one of the Demon Doggy Diners. You'll notice I'm wearing the original Demon Doggy Diner because there's been many versions of it on my shirt. So for those of you who don't
know, an NFT.
This is definitely not a fucking NFT.
He's about to drop it.
Although I don't know. I'm not anti-ordinals necessarily. Maybe we should make one, maybe. But so shout out to my dad because he makes all of these. So my dad used to be known back in Memphis, where I'm from originally, as we always say, do it for them, as the King of Halloween. My mom and dad were the king and queen of Halloween. So my dad is an artist and makes these incredible six foot tall giant monsters.
Wow.
And maybe one day we'll be able to show them off in the Bay Area. That'd be cool. But as of right now, he doesn't really have the yard to be able to do that. So instead he makes these masks and we probably got a dozen of them. And we go around, he more than me, when I have time. The reasons I'm not reading the group chat is my other priority is spending a lot of time walking around town with these masks with my dad. And we go around and
not last, type one summit at all.
No, that too. There's a lot going on in life, right?
You're a busy man.
I'm never going to be doing another summit. I did this last year too with my LP day right around Halloween. Like, Halloween is too sacred of a holiday to be doing all this other stuff. But whatever, lesson learned. We all learned. And so we went to like one of our Halloween, like there's like the kids out on the beach, you know, last week. And you know, we went and showed them off, although it was raining and windy. So it was a rough day. But you know, the kids love it. I mean, adults too. It's really fun as you walk around town with these. You know, you just like see people like shocked. Most people are like kind of absorbed in their like phone reality or like worried about some bullshit in life. And then all of a sudden you like snap them back into reality when they just see you in one of these. It's great fun. I recommend everyone do more things that snap yourself and others back into reality. And particularly with the kids, a lot of them love it, but you know, it's not Halloween unless you get at least one kid that starts screaming, crying, running to their mom. We got that last week. They were absolutely terrified. The mom had to run down the street to catch this like 3-year-old. They were terrified. And you know, that's successful Halloween.
And how much DMT was used?
Well, we're working our way through. Second question is, what is it made from? So this is where my dad, shout out to my dad out here. He's a genius in what he can do because he does a lot with a little, which by the way, I saw someone put that on there and it was like a LinkedIn or something. It's like, what their skills were, living well on a little. And I was like, that's a skill we should all aim for. This is made of paper towels. It's paper mache. It's just like, this is like hood stuff from around the house, paper towels and paint, nothing fancy. Very cool. Art, the best ideas, to your point, Bitcoin white paper, everything starts from the edge. Like if you get too close to the center and too close to the money spigot, things get nasty. But when you're on the edge, stuff looks good. So just paper towels and paint. And then the last question, how much DMT? I'll have to ask my dad. I'm guessing...
Non-zero.
No comment. But it's funny you mentioned that because I was talking to some folks about some of their experiences this week. So it's, you know, it's possible. You never know.
Very cool.
All right.
Well, I want to rattle off a few things before we wrap it.
Hit me. What you got? Yeah.
Well, one, we talked about prediction markets a little bit. I mean, Polymarket is one that most people have probably heard of, maybe used a little bit. They just recently announced accepting Bitcoin.
It's great.
But what led me to learn about that was that there's a Bitcoin focused one called, I think it's pronounced Predicts.
Yeah.
Predyx. I think Connor shared it with me. And then I decided to just.
I've seen it on Stacker News.
They post on Stacker News all the time.
Yeah, I decided to play with it.
You gotta be on Stacker News more, Steve.
I missed it. I don't know. But anyway, played with the super slick onboarding and user experience. I just wanted to describe what that is and then maybe compare it a little bit to Polymarket and how, you know, how can Predicts keep an edge?
Mm-hmm.
So the user experience is great because first of all, to register, I could just use my Bitcoin private key. It used LNURL off.
That's cool.
So I just like it presented just like Stacker News, right? It presented a QR code. I scanned it with Phoenix Wallet. That was me registering.
Nice.
So super slick.
No email address, no KYC.
So there's the remain anonymous part, but also just the onboarding UX. It's so fast and simple. Because at first I didn't see that option. So I'm like, I got to fill out this form and who knows what else. It's less me being like, I mean, part of me is like, well, certainly if a passport, I don't want to do that, but just the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just like put it away and move on to something else. So it was so simple. And then I was able to quickly and easily deposit money into the system through a Lightning, right? And then, and it was instant. So within seconds, I was able to register, get money into the system, and participate in a prediction. So I did like the World Series. I put, you know, a little bit of money on Toronto.
Is it baseball happening? I don't even know anybody watch baseball. Are you geriatric now?
It's the World Series, man.
It's happening now.
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like DK for once.
I know. Yeah. I'll sit in the corner here and talk baseball.
That's bowling, right?
No, there's amazing cricket stories. I mean, Ohtani for the Dodgers is like the most incredible player ever with pitching and batting.
I'm more interested in cricket.
All right. And since we're late, I'll skip the baseball story, but we'll pick up baseball next week. Anyhow, and then the way their UI works or their system works, you buy like, I forget what they call them. I'm almost scared to say the word token because it's not a token. The bad word.
You get cowboy credit.
Units. You get units or like shares. I think it was maybe called shares. But about like 100 shares in the prediction of the outcome of the World Series, which costs something like a fraction of a sat for a share. So 100 was like 3 sats. So I see. My bet here, in case this is illegal, I don't know, but it's 3 sats. So we're talking like sub penny bet. But just the user experience to do this was like super fast, super simple.
Cool.
I thought it was awesome.
We should get them up here.
With
sure.
Polymarket, my understanding, I mean, I've gone to it just to see like current estimates, but I've never participated. So my understanding with registering is you do need to KYC. So if that barrier remains, then to me, Predicts is like far more compelling than Polymarket. And we'll just see, usually with a Bitcoin focused, product that you can just do more, go farther, like with the focus than one that supports a zillion different coins. So hopefully Predicts does well. And then I don't know any of the regulatory side of things. So like, can it continue being no KYC? I have no idea.
I think the regulatory, like I think Kalshi is the big competitor to Polymarket. I think Kalshi is fully regulated. And that enables them to be plugged in. I think they got plugged into Robinhood.
Wow.
I'm not a Robinhood or a Kalshi customer, but my understanding is if you are a Robinhood customer, you can participate in the Kalshi prediction markets without additional KYC or sign up or anything. So I appreciate all the points you're making around the simplicity of UX and Bitcoin-centric experience, but I think also figuring out how to get liquidity and distribution is an important challenge that predicts should still be thinking about and figuring out how to solve. And sometimes the regulated prediction markets, I think, have advantages because they can be plugged into places where people already have, you know, value on store.
Two quick thoughts on that. I would love to go deeper. I mean, and you put this on my radar. I don't know if the predicts guys want to start a company or kind of want to do it at the edges, but it's interesting because no KYC doesn't just have the obvious benefits. And by the way, this feels a little bit, it feels very Bitcoin. Like, feels like one of those things where, like, regardless of whether they can go the traditional route or not, you know, it feels like the kind of thing that could get real traction regardless. And like, that's where Bitcoin has always thrived, is on the edges. But I also, the thing I am most excited about, and the Predicts founders, if you're listening to this and you are thinking this way, definitely let me know, is when you have no KYC for prediction markets, that allows bots to use it. And so what I'm interested in is you can start literally having bots creating their own prediction markets and working and betting with other bots. That to me is something that could just go like 1000x. And it's early for that, but I'm most interested that if you don't have KYC or identity, then you can literally have new life forms using it, which is cool.
Yep. Super cool.
What do you think about Brian Armstrong's earnings report? Was that good or bad for prediction markets? Because in case you didn't
follow that dude.
Oh, well, there's a prediction market about which words he would say during earnings. And so at the end of earnings,
crypto.
At the end of, well, you know, Web3 was one. Web3 was one. But at the end of the earnings report, he pulled up Polymarket and just read off every word.
So, did he really?
Yeah. So it was like, it made everyone a winner that bet that he would say it. Now,
did he say Bitcoin? Just curious.
I think that was one of the words, right? Yeah. So, you know, I think that's kind of funny. It's an interesting moment to do it. But at the same time, insider knowledge here could have completely, I mean, I don't know how much money was actually, but imagine a lot of money and volume here. Like insider knowledge to him doing that would like completely rig these markets.
I mean, that's what Coinbase is doing from day zero. So,
So anyway,
not surprised.
But I think
for me, it almost it makes me question these markets more.
I think it's good to illustrate just how these things work. I think it's illustrative of the broader point of how prediction markets work and how they can be influenced and how you can bring information or you can. The market itself could cause a different outcome.
Yeah.
All of that is stuff that people should be aware of instead of thinking of a prediction market as this like remote, you know, isolated thing that just like observes the world.
So I think it was educational. It
plays with the world, right?
And people should understand that though. There's different, like no one's going to do an earnings report that affects the Toronto Blue Jays winning the World Series. But so you need to know what you're putting money on.
but I think some can
be rigged and some can't.
Like I think my understanding, and I'm not an expert in prediction markets, but
I was about to say we just literally talked about Chauncey Billups going to jail for this. So.
Yeah.
But I think one of the functions of the platforms themselves, like the Polymarkets, the Kalshis, is that they decide what markets get made. Does that sound right to you? I think that's like you can't just come and make up your own and just launch it. I think you have to.
I think you can on Predicts at least.
That's what I was going to point out. Because Predicts is a very different thing. I think instead of going after the same markets that Polymarket and Kalshi go after, instead which are more like they're curating which markets get made. This is almost more like
the
a tool that you could use with your friends to do like a sports betting thing, or you could take it. Maybe most of the markets end up being kind of more private in nature and they're not discoverable. But it's more like a tool that lets you construct these kinds of markets for yourself, which
that's
to me
idea.
Seems like a very differentiated value prop. Like I agree, you know, with Steve's point that it's like a nice UX, but ultimately like a nice UX can't beat volume and distribution. But if it has like a different feature in the world that it can actually be used in a very different way, in a private way, and it's not meant to be a discovery hub, but meant to be a tool, that seems promising to me.
I love that, and I love anything that enables the long tail. So you guys are making me more bullish on Predicts. I definitely need to go do a little bit more research.
Well, I learned the founder is in Southern California too, so
thanks for
inviting
him
to Presidio Bitcoin.
Oh, great.
And, you should come chill. I'm interested in learning more if you're listening.
Maybe he's listening
to
the show, and another invitation to come visit us up here. We'd love to chat with you.
But I just want to say really two quick things on that. Number one, what you're saying though, it's no different than traditional markets. Traditional markets are also probably right. Like, I don't know, like if you look at like insider trading as a thing, like people know, like whenever you see someone.
It's very different for two reasons. One, I mean, there's the SEC and it's a regulated market. It is. I mean, like I'm not saying it's perfect, but people do get put in prison. There are investigations.
From time to time, exactly.
Well, no, but it is a difference. Like it exists. There's investigations, there's enforcement. I didn't say it's perfect. I didn't say it.
Yeah, I get your point.
Gets everything, and like I don't. It's indisputable.
Yeah.
And then secondly, is that the prediction markets is like way more wide open than the stock market. I mean, the stock market, there's only a finite amount that are have gone through this SEC process to be registered, and it's like it's just easier to like watch that. I mean, totally. Even you guys are saying that's hard to watch, right? But I agree. But like, it's impossible to regulate.
So where I think this is going to be
an open prediction market where anything can be predicted.
Anything can be predicted. I think there's going to be good and bad from that. And I think what's cool is I've always wondered why aren't prediction markets taking off? And like maybe now is finally the moment.
They are. I mean,
they are now, right? But I mean, I've been wondering this for like 15 years.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what the kick was. Maybe it was just like more liquidity on these markets or easier user experiences, whatever. Maybe the sports betting going mainstream. But I think what's really cool is we're going to have in real time the ability to solve some of these problems. Like it's like I think one of the great challenge for Bitcoiners is, you know, no one wants things like insider trading. We just think that centralized institutions are like often just too corrupt, too opaque to be able to do that well. It'd be awesome if institutions were honest. Like that would be really cool. But I think what's going to be really interesting is like, how do you try and get some of that in a bottoms up way? And so there's going to be huge experimentation around oracles, reputation with oracles, markets on and which oracles are honest, things like that. And I just think that's going to be super fun to watch. And I just want to say this one more time because I think it's very important, whether it's the predicts guys or someone else, you know, finding authenticity and truth in a world with AI is going to be so, so, so important. So figuring out how to like run markets to find truth in or closer to truth in a world that, like, where there's a lot of fake stuff or spam on the internet is interesting. And then really making this like an agent first experience. That's what I would be watching for a company that could just blow it out of the water.
So there's three more topics I was hoping to talk about.
I got to pee.
You guys,
this
group can't do rapid fire.
No, we're not going
to. I'm going to mention them though. Maybe we tee it up for next week.
Just but
one Substrate was announced, which is a competitor to ASML. ASML is a critical company in process for semiconductor, and they're a monopoly. No one else competes with them. I understand it's a huge barrier to entry, but like I've always found it puzzling that no one tries.
Yeah.
So I can't speak anything to Substrate, their technology, the odds of success or whatever.
It's a good name.
The team behind it, but let's hope they create competition there.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Two, the CoreWeave deal to buy Core Scientific fell apart. So, we can get into a huge mining topic, but just FYI, that we've talked about that before in the show. And talked about AI and mining. And so interesting that I think they're being acquired for $9 billion. The highest
couch change is what I've heard.
The peak market cap for Core Scientific is its current price, I didn't look today, but yesterday when I saw this news, it was like $6.8 billion. So the premium over their all-time high is like almost 50%. Shareholders rejected that. So it really speaks to what shareholders are very bullish on the future of Core Scientific.
Yep.
And then the last thing is Simple X. Did you ever guys ever try Simple X?
You mean
messaging app?
Simplex?
Simplex. Oh.
Or be Simplex.
Oh,
the worst name of all time.
I don't even know how to pronounce it, but now maybe I used to call it Simplex. Now I'll call it Simplex.
Well, I'm kind of trolling on them.
Because so you guys used it, but for the people not familiar with this, but it came, I think it was introduced 2 years ago or something.
Yeah.
But it's like it was a new messaging app that was like more decentralized than more private maybe than Signal. It had a horrible user experience out of the box, but you know, maybe it was promising. But yesterday they announced NFTs and a token and a whole new block. I don't know if they're building their own blockchain or they're building on Ethereum, but either way, it was an interesting move.
It was sad.
Unexpected move.
Unexpected, because also I think Jack led their seed round or something, which is like, I mean, I guess I know he never like tells people what to do, but like, it's just disappointing. Like,
I didn't even know they'd raised money.
Yeah. Jack was the lead investor. In fact, they raised a little bit of money, I think, from Village Global early on, which I thought was a good bet from them. And then they raised more from Jack. And so I was hopeful. I was like, okay, this one I should be watching. This is great. I never would have dreamed. It's like, man, like, why do all the good things just have to shitcoin? So there's still a huge opportunity. Maybe it'll be white noise or something coming out of Nostr. But it's just sad. And if the Simplex guys are listening, it's not too late. You can come back and do a real business model.
I didn't look at all the details. They did respond to a lot of I'm sure they anticipated a lot of negative criticism on social media, which they did get. And they did respond to a lot. I didn't go verify any of this, but I think they were responding like there's no pre-mine. Mm-hmm. They, like Bitcoin doesn't solve their needs because they need smarter smart contracts. So there might be more to read here before immediately dismissing them. I remember BISC, BISQ.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I love BISC.
They introduced a token.
Yeah, but wasn't that was more like a share of like Bitcoin revenues? No,
it was sort of the lubricant to make their peer to peer trading work. But they went to great.
All right, we'll have to say that one for next week. I'm not sure I follow, but.
Well, because they want to be a decentralized exchange. So how do you do a decentralized exchange?
Well, I think you do it on Nostr, but.
Well, okay. No one's built that though. Yeah. And Nostr didn't exist when they did
that's true,
it.
That's
no
true.
One's built that. So, they wanted to stay Bitcoin only so that you couldn't build Uniswap. So how are they supposed to do it? So they came up with a token. I'm just saying that was an example of where. I think the people behind BISC are tried and true Bitcoiners.
Totally, no.
But they introduced a token, right? And so maybe that's the case here with SimpleX. I don't know. I'm just saying there might be more to it.
We should look into it. But there is an opportunity and maybe something like the white noise protocol or whatever coming out of Nostr. Like maybe there's something there.
And speaking of, did you guys share? I thought I saw something with the hurricanes in Haiti and Jamaica that BitChat is kind of blowing up to take over.
First of all, before we get too giddy, like, having left with a Cat 5 storm in New Orleans back in, you know, Katrina 2005, like, that's all the people in Jamaica. I know that's just got to be freaking horrible and terrifying and like just getting welted by a storm. But the interesting part for Bitcoiners is that I think I saw Callie sharing that BitChat is now number two, Dell and up. Maybe it's number one by now. So interesting case study.
Which like, even though it's, you know, Bluetooth mesh origin, it's, I think, kind of adjacent to what Simplex was trying to do. It's white noise based. It's, you know, kind of Nostr based. So it touches on thematically things related to Simplex, but almost certainly is never going to introduce.
We should talk more about that one next week.
Incentives.
I would love to learn and see how it functioned for the people there. One question I didn't understand is even if they're all of their internet is down, so it's like Bluetooth peer to peer. I guess. They don't need
just for coordinating among themselves, maybe.
Yeah.
It might not be to access the internet.
I think I saw Dread was doing a fundraiser. I didn't go look into it deeply. I should check out more on Nostr, but it'd be cool to hear from Dread or other people how that, like, did it work? What worked? What didn't? And maybe we can cover that next week.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for going through those with me.
Just two more hours and
happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Happy White Paper Day.
Happy White Paper Day.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.